and gentlemen, welcome to another broadcast of The Ron Shaw Show on the Artist First Radio Network, The Shaw Show Redemption Hour. All past broadcasts are archived. Visit artistfirst.com. And now, here's your host, Mr. Ron Shaw.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to The Ron Shaw Show. I am Ron Shaw. My guest is a rascal tonight. She's got me laughing even before the show started. This is going to be wild and crazy night, folks. And let me tell you something about the show this evening. Oh, and good evening, by the way, if I didn't say it already. I am so happy, so very happy to have a fellow Georgian on the show with me tonight. It's always fun to have people on from my state, especially when I didn't know them beforehand, and I've met them through this radio program and through writing books and hanging out at Twitter and Facebook. Well, I met this young lady, and I've been laughing with her now for days and days when we do talk on the phone a little bit. And she's from Savannah, Georgia. Well, around Savannah, Georgia, let's call it that. And her name is Bibiana Crawl. Bibiana, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me, Ron. I'm excited to be here.
What are you laughing about?
I'm still laughing about what you were saying before we were on the air. So.
Oh, I just said I'd published a book and you started laughing. What was funny about that?
But you told me a few days ago that you were going to publish it next week, and all of a sudden it's published today, which is a full week ahead of schedule.
Well, you know, when the muse gets cranked up, you know what I mean.
I know.
When the words are flying, don't stop. Don't stop now.
I start catching things on fire in the oven. I know.
There you go. Let it burn, baby. Let it burn. Okay. Well, let me, you know, I met you through, what, Twitter, Facebook, or both, one or the other. Maybe Twitter.
We met on Twitter.
On Twitter. And, you know, I find people in, let's see, Facebook, Twitter, people who recommend people to me sometimes a good bit. And I'll find somebody who seems very interesting to me, and then I'll make contact with them like I did with you. And I think I was right, because you're a very interesting lady. And tell the folks, now this is worldwide now, and this thing will be played hundreds of thousands of times. And people will click on your show and listen to you. And so tell the people around the world now about you. This is your chance. Let them know who Bibiana Crawl is.
Well, I guess you are what you eat and you are what you do. So I'm a glass of wine and a chicken finger, and I write a lot.
Glass of wine and a chicken finger? Why not a buffalo wing?
Because that's not what I had.
Oh, you had a glass of wine. Okay, red or white or what? What kind of wine you drank?
Well, it was red because that's also what was on the counter, because I did a lot of writing today. I think I wrote about 6,000 words for one of my classes.
Whoo, 6,000 words. Well, you know what Stone Wilson used to say, you know, the old chef down in Louisiana, I think he was. What kind of wine do I like to drink when I eat? The kind of wine I want to drink when I eat. Doesn't matter what I'm having.
Well, the best kind of wine is the kind that's on your counter. You don't have to go to the store for.
There you go. 6,000 words?
Yeah, I know. It just got to the point where I was like, okay, I have to make a decision here. And you told me on Twitter to stop writing, so I took your very good advice, and I went and had a glass of wine and made some supper.
Chill out. That's right. Take a break. Every now and then you gotta put the muse down. Tell them, look, go take a break. Go get a burger, some fries, come back later, and let's talk, all right? We'll do it.
Go out in the backyard and leave me alone?
Go play in the backyard. Go away. Yeah, well, what was that famous? I wish I could remember the famous author's name. Of course, he's fantastic, great. Everybody knows him, but hell, I'm terrible with names. But the one who said, yeah, I'm lucky my muse has the same sleep schedule as I do.
I don't know.
I love
it. One of your favorites, was it Hunter?
Yeah, might have been Hunter S. Thompson. Might have been. I don't know. I forget. No, I don't know who it was. But that's pretty cool, you know. When you first start out, it's kind of hard to control the muse, isn't it?
It really is. It's like having a caveman in the closet. Once you open the door, it's all over the house. Everything's just crazy. And you can't concentrate on anything. I have to set timers to make myself stop because I won't. I will go until I pass out on the floor.
A timer? You mean like you're baking a cake or cookies or something?
I tried doing that. I tried a couple of months ago. I had this brilliant idea that I could write books and bake cookies. So when my family came home, they would have cookies. I would have done my writing. Everything would be wonderful. And there was one day that something happened. I don't remember what it was, but one of my naughty characters really started acting up in my story. And I forgot. I totally forgot. I mean, this person was doing like kung fu moves and stuff, and so I had to act them out.
And oh, with your family there, huh? Okay, acting out with them, huh?
Yeah.
Hey, now, when you say naughty now, remember, we have a lot of fans in England and over in Europe. And naughty over there means more than just kung fu. You know that.
No. I'm not talking about 50 Shades of anything except for cookies.
You're talking about kung fu fighting, right? Okay.
Right. Kung fu fighting. Now, that to me, that is naughty. That is a different word, and we are not going that way, Mr. Shaw.
I don't want to go that way either. Trust me on that. But, you know, last week I had Cleo from the Netherlands, and speaking about putting your timer on, you know, so she says when she does a show, she starts it and she will not quit until it's done. And she spent 11 hours straight putting a show together, radio show.
I could see. She's very intense.
Yeah.
Really, really amazing. I mean, I went back and forth with her on Twitter a couple of Sundays or Saturdays or something ago. And, I mean, honestly, she wore the battery out on my laptop.
She'll do it. She'll do that.
And
but
I was just like, she's going to keep going. But I think she had something to do, and I know I had something to do, too. So finally we signed off with each other, but I could see her being like that. She's really super focused.
Well, you know, from the things you've said. Now, folks, I want to tell you something. Now, Bibiana might not say this or agree with it even, but writers from the South, especially when you were created down this way and you've been down this way and your whole life, you have a different way of writing, a different way of thinking. You have terms that you use, and I love that about you. When, like you said, it came in the closet. You know, you wouldn't hear that from one of my guests from Massachusetts or Maine or New York.
Oh,
or
Boston, I'm sure they I'm sure they have cavemen in closets up there.
Bibiana, they're not nearly as creative as we are. I'm going to tell you right now, flat out, folks, that's it. Check the back of that book and look and see if the authors from the South buy that book. Trust me on that. Like Bibiana's books. Now, you love the coast. I know because I'm reading one of your books right now, as you know.
Oh, yeah.
You love the ocean. You love the coast. You love everything about it. It's obvious in every word you write. Is that a fair statement?
That is an incredibly true statement, yes.
Well, I mean, why? What's this attraction with
what is it? You know what I think it is that once you hit the bridges in South Carolina and you start getting towards the Broad River Sound or the Ace Basin, or you get anywhere that's like that. And even in South Georgia, when you're on your way to Jacksonville and you start going over the really big water, it just, life gets quiet. And your phone quits working, and you don't need anything. You can just roll down the window, and you can be there, and you see bald eagles, and you see dolphins. I mean, it's just, it's life unplugged.
Wow.
And that's beautiful.
See, folks, life unplugged. I'm not kidding. When I first met you, I loved it with the terminology you use on certain things and the little twists and turns you put on language. I really like that. And is it, now you can see why. If you go back, let's see, the Odyssey, you know, you read stuff with people who have a knowledge and a love of the sea, and it just shows in their writing. And you can understand the sirens, you know. I mean, why wrote about them? Because the sea is calling you, isn't it?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, someday, someday when things are a little bit different in my life, my husband and I want to sail for a while. I don't know if we're going to do a lot of blue water, but we want to bop around. We want to hear the wind, feel the sun, just sort of drop off the radar just a little bit. And not because we're running from anything, but more because we're running to something. He and I both have had really busy lives most of our lives. And, you know, just to the point where the emails don't stop, the phone calls don't stop, the people are always there needing something. And, you know, there comes a point in your life where you stop needing all of those sort of luxury items, and you start wanting peace and quiet and beauty and nature. And that's pretty much where I'm at this point.
Well, that's where you live, too. I mean, when you get away, like you're talking about, to the point you're talking about, wow, you haven't got very far to go to get that way, you know?
No. I'm very fortunate. Sometimes when I get in the car and I blow about, I don't know, 3 or 4 gallons of gas, I'm already in a place that people have to spend an entire year planning to get to, and it's really not that far from where I'm at.
Wow.
And I know all the good spots, but I ain't telling you those tonight.
No, I'll tell you. Do. Hey, now, what's the sailing, okay, and setting out in the deep water? What's the farthest the trip you've ever been sailing?
Well, as far as sailing,
yeah.
We did, gosh, I don't know how far out. I mean, I've never done a transatlantic or anything like that. I've gone in between islands in the Caribbean, but that's a whole lot different than, like, sailing to Bermuda. That's one thing I'd really like to do, but I always hear these crazy stories about these storms that are usually, you know, like 200 miles off Bermuda, and it just scares me that I would be that close and I wouldn't manage to get to Bermuda. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would probably rise up from the sea from my broken to bit boat and swim to Bermuda just to get there. Just to prove a point. Because I would be so mad that I didn't get there.
Well, this is a little sidebar thing, all right? My wife and I, a good friend of mine, was married in New Orleans. And we were in a wedding. I was in a wedding. And this was back in the 70s. And we stayed with some of the relatives in his bride's family. And we go to this house. You know, you've been to New Orleans, I would assume. Most people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, you know the Garden District. Very nice, you know.
Sure.
Well, we're in the Garden District where the big old antebellum houses are, you know. Where the Victorian stuff houses are.
Well, I think that's the prettiest. I mean, no offense. Anybody who's from NOLA, but I think that's the prettiest part of New Orleans.
Oh, yeah. And we've been there quite a few times. But anyway, we were staying with this family, and the husband, they called him Tootie. And we go in, and Tootie wasn't home yet when we got there, but his wife and his three children were. Go into the den and make a drink, you know. And we look in his den, and all over the wall and the countertop tables and stuff, piano stuff, are pictures of him selling races with people like Ted Turner.
Wow.
Can you imagine? And he said, yeah, they do a race every year. I don't know, from New Orleans down around Florida someplace and turn around and come back or something like that. I don't know. But they got several races that he would go in. But that always fascinated me. The seas always fascinated me. And I'm landlocked. I'm Atlanta boy. You know, I have to go turn the faucet on to see some water. But at any rate, I do love it, and I love stuff about it. I like the movies. I like, you know, like the series now, Black Sails. I love it.
Oh, that's a great series.
Yeah, so I understand that. Now, okay, I'm going to ask you a question I don't think I've ever asked a guest. What would you like to talk about?
Well, you know, you and I were talking about ghosts and the paranormal.
Ooh,
when
okay.
We first met each other, and we could talk about that if you want. It's really open. It's really open. We can talk about what inspires us to write.
That's why I was throwing it. I was lobbing the ball into your court. So you brought the first thing up. Let's do that paranormal thing.
Yeah, let's
do that ghost thing.
Yeah.
Okay, you write about it?
Well, I do, and you know, it's funny because I don't consider myself a horror or a supernatural writer, but what I do is I weave supernatural or mysticism sometimes into my stories because in the world I live in the world I understand, that's actually part of everyday life. And a lot of people, I think that it's a special genre, which it can be. You know, it can be a special genre if that's all you're talking about.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about life or you have a character and something just crazy, insane, you know this isn't something everyone's experiencing happens, and you weave it into the story, can you really call it a supernatural or paranormal story? Well, maybe. But I like to weave it in the same way it comes to me in my life. And, you know, it just like I said to someone tonight, I said, you can't call the aliens and you can't call the ghosts. When they're ready, they'll show up just like a muse does.
Yeah, they come on their own. Yeah.
So in my opinion, you know, supernatural or ghosts or hauntings, things like that, they happen. And people will say they don't believe in it, but, you know, if you really ask somebody, you give them a couple of drinks in a corner somewhere, they'll tell you about something that they don't understand, they've never understood, that has happened to them in their life. Maybe that's just a weather anomaly. Maybe it's, I don't know, a really poorly ventilated room and the door is always closed. But maybe it's something else.
Yeah, you know, since when I wrote, I understand what you're saying about you weave it into what you write. It may not be the integral part of what you're writing about, but it's in there. It's in there when you cover that when it comes up. But when I was writing mine with Mary's Trunk and that series, it was unbelievable the amount of people, like you're talking about, who would tell me their stories.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have people write me emails and try to contact me by phone and stuff and just tell me their ghost stories.
Right.
I loved it, Viviana. It was fantastic. Boy, did I get some, I'm talking about goosebump creating stories, I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah.
And I've had people want to buy Mary's Trunk like you would not believe. And
no,
not
I'm
for
glad
sale.
You have.
No.
I'm glad you haven't.
No, we still have it. Still got it.
But you got to have something out in that garage.
Well, it's not coming in the house. I can tell you that right now. It's not coming in the house. But the coastal area, that's rich. With that kind of, not just ghosts, but other paranormal, like probably, voodoo, and all the other stuff. And
oh, yeah.
That kind of thing, because there's so many tragedies related to the sea, of course, goodness gracious. You know, not to mention all the other things that go on down there. Okay, so in your area, do you have one of the more famous or whatever stories that you know of about a ghost or a whatever, a poltergeist or anything like that?
Well, actually, I've had a few things happen to me.
All right, roll it out. Let's do it.
Okay, well, years ago, when my daughter was born, I lived way out on Tybee, and we moved into Thunderbolt, which is basically a village in between Tybee Island and Savannah. So it's its own entity, but basically it just, you know, you can't really see the difference in between Savannah and Thunderbolt. And I rented this little house because it was only about 5 minutes to Memorial Hospital. So I wanted to be close because I was very concerned with the traffic and, you know, that sort of thing. Anyway, moved into this little house in this, you know, sort of modest, retiree kind of neighborhood. But it's only about a quarter of a mile from Bonaventure Cemetery, which is one of the most famous cemeteries probably in the United States. Because it was in the movie Midnight, even though it actually wasn't. It was represented in the movie Midnight, but it wasn't actually in the movie. They used a different cemetery in Beaufort, come to find out later. But
And the Garden of Good and Evil, Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, yeah.
Right. They were saying it was Bonaventure, but actually the filming took place in a different cemetery somewhere in Beaufort County, from what I understand. But anyway, the story of Bonaventure is very interesting. And many, many years ago, it was a plantation. And I hadn't heard the story before something happened one night. And I was in my cottage, my baby was sleeping, and I had all the windows open because it was springtime, so I had all the fans going, and, you know, it was really nice out. And I started hearing these sounds like people throwing a party. And mind you, I'm in a very quiet neighborhood. Almost everybody in my neighborhood's 80 years old plus, except
no
for me.
Partying going on much. No, not much.
Oh, dear Lord, no. These people were asleep by 7 o'clock. You know what I mean?
Not getting down, but go ahead.
Sometimes the TV got loud, you know, but the people didn't get loud. So I hear, you know, and I mean, it sounds like hundreds of people throwing like a huge party, like a barbecue, and getting a little out of control. And I hear smashing, and then I hear a whooshing sound, like something bad's happening, you know, like a fire. So I said something to somebody a couple days later about it, and she said, "You heard what?" And I told it all to her again. And she said, "You don't know." And I said, "Know what?" And she said, "You don't know about Bonaventure." I said, "What am I supposed to know? I mean, it's an enormous cemetery on a block."
Yeah.
And I used to go down there all the time when I lived down there because it's one of the prettiest places in Savannah to walk on the edge of the bluff.
Yeah.
But anyway, she said, "Oh, honey." And she told me the story. And she said, Bonaventure was a plantation, a functioning plantation, with hundreds of slaves and just all kinds of stuff. It was enormous. It took up this whole bluff from one side of the river to the other side of the river. And one night, they were having some kind of party, and something happened. Somebody got drunk. Somebody knocked something over and knocked the candelabras over inside the manor house. And the curtains caught on fire. Well, everybody was outside drinking and hooting, hollering, whatever. And instead of them putting the fire out, it sort of went into a burn, baby, burn kind of situation.
Bonfire City, baby, yeah.
And the whole place went up in smoke, and everybody kept partying.
Wow.
And the myth, or the true story is that on quiet nights, some people that I've met, that especially people who go on their boat sometimes up the river at night, have heard the same thing I heard. Glasses breaking. People partying in Bonaventure Cemetery. It's pitch black at night. It's not lit up, and it's locked. You can't go in there. And you don't want to, because that local sheriff don't play.
Mm.
But people have heard it, the same thing I heard. And so, you know, I wondered about it after this lady talked to me about it. And I went down there, went down to where I thought I heard it. And there's a big oak tree down there. There's a lot of big oak trees inside Bonaventure. But one of the oak trees that I was walking around, just like remembering, you know, what I was hearing, it had these strange things tacked to the trees, made out of popsicle sticks, little pieces of plastic and colored twine. And they looked like, down in the Caribbean, what they call a poppet.
Yeah, okay.
So it looked like somebody was doing some kind of magic down in the cemetery. And it made me nervous. You know, I don't mess with things I don't understand, especially things like that. And so I left it where it was, went back home. A couple days later, took a walk down there again. It was still there. And then, I don't know, a week, 2 weeks later or whatever, it was gone. Like it had never been there. There weren't pieces of it down below the tree or whatever. So somebody is doing something down there. And maybe what they're doing is calling this.
Calling them in. Calling to, hey, the sign, the party will commence tonight or whenever, yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah.
But it was really, really creepy because it was hundreds of voices. It wasn't just like one, you know, calling my name.
Yeah.
It was hundreds of people.
Oh, that's a good spooky one. That's a good by the light of the campfire story there. Yeah. Hey, we got to take a quick break, and we'll be back. We'll do a few little things here. Spot Z-Man, you ready to go? Hang on the line, Viviana. We'll be right back, but we're going to play some things.
Hi, Ron. This is Dorothy Mae Mercer over at Mercer Publications. We want to thank your listeners for their support of our series of how-to books for authors. The latest one is How to Register ISBN Numbers and Copyrights, 99 cents for the ebook. For details, just hop over to mercerpublications.com.
The new release, Without From Within, Poems by Ron Shaw, is a must-read. One reviewer wrote, "The depth and imagery of these poems is of surpassing beauty. They flow and blossom from the pages, even as they rip the soul. This volume should be in every poem lover's library. Inspiring and fabulous." Another reviewer wrote, "The best poems are not just the ones that touch us through great turns of phrase, but the ones that tell a story to keep our mind reeling." Ron Shaw delivers on both counts with wonderful concise tales from the whimsical to the existential, the dramatic to the heart-wrenching. Whether it is the social commentary of the dull or the relentless and intimate strength of the pulse, Shaw will keep you glued to the page with his thought-provoking verse. You won't want to miss Without From Within, Poems by Ron Shaw. Available at Amazon.com in English, as an audiobook and in paperback, and in both English and French as an ebook.
Ernest Hemingway, William Faulkner, Mark Twain, Harper Lee. Some of our most beloved writers came from the South, and still do. Southern Writers Magazine takes you up close with best-selling authors, sharing their secrets of success in writing and promotion. In each inspiration-packed issue, you'll find your favorite writers and meet a few new ones. Whether you read good books or want to write them, subscribe at SouthernWritersMagazine.com today. Southern Writers, the Authors Magazine.
Thanks for joining us on the Ron Shaw Show on the Artist First Radio Network. All past shows are archived. You can pick them up at artistfirst.com. Let's get back to your host, Mr. Ron Shaw.
Hey, thank you, Z-Man. I'm back, folks, with a fellow Georgian author, and she's down around the Savannah area, down there at the coastal part of Georgia, in the southeastern part of Georgia, and it's Bibiana Krall, and she just told, a marvelous story of a cemetery where she lived once in between Tybee and Savannah in there. And I know there are Tybee Island and all, but New Orleans. Let's go back to New Orleans, can we, for a sec?
Yeah, sure.
Viviana, okay. Well, this one, I'll give you the short tour. We stayed at a haunted suite in New Orleans. And before that, if you said, "Ron, do you believe in ghosts?" I'd say, "Well, I believe in the idea of them. Yeah, I believe in the value of a story, I can understand how some things are unexplainable, you know. But if you said, "Well, do you believe in them?" I would say I did, you know. But after that weekend in New Orleans, I do. Because we spent two nights in the haunted suite. And the hotel's still there. You can get a room. I'll show you where the suite is. It's on the internet. And you can see the room we stayed in, the suite, I mean. And, yeah, there's a young girl presence in that suite. Well, anyway, forget about that, because it was spooky as all get out. But we were there. We went to the famous cemetery. When you brought up cemeteries, maybe think of it. What, Madame, what's her name? DuVaux was her name? Madame DuVaux, whatever. Yeah, we went to the cemetery she supposedly interred in. And like you say, and all the, you know, of course, they have to primarily bury people above ground in New Orleans.
Right.
So they sink, so they, that's why they have all those mausoleums and that type thing. And
I think they call them crypts down there. I think they call them crypts.
Yeah, they got all kind of X's on them and writings and little things,
yeah.
Like you know about the voodoo stuff and all that. And that cemetery back then was only about a couple, three blocks from where Anne Rice lived. So while we were there, it was closed, but of course we climbed over the gate. We don't care. You know, who cares, you know.
You climbed over the gate and...
Yeah. We were knocking about the cemetery. It was closed.
Okay.
Not at Anne Rice's house, no.
I was like, are you crazy?
No. We just rode by and saw her house. Hey, Anne Rice lives there. We waved goodbye, you know. No, but the cemetery, we went knocking about it, you know, right before sunset. Ooh, it's kind of spooky. New Orleans is a spooky place, period. If I live in New Orleans, I'd be writing about ghosts every day, I think, you know.
I think you would have a ghost as your muse.
I see it. Oh, I already have that. Hey, my
yeah,
cat.
You know, you kind of do. You kind of do. How come you don't allow the chest in your house?
Because the lady we got it from, she did the same thing, but she made the mistake when she acquired it. Up in, I think it was either, I forget, Massachusetts, Maine. Her and her husband were on the lobster trail, you know, on a vacation. Way back when. And they were antiquing, and she saw that trunk in an antique shop in a little town they were in, eating, you know, lobster bits, sandwiches and stuff, and drinking some beer, maybe.
Wait a minute. But she got that in, she got it in Maine, but you bought it in New Orleans?
No, I bought it here where I live in Georgia. Uh-huh. She brought it back from that vacation, but
okay.
When she entered the shop, she saw something move to her, I think she said her right side, and she saw the trunk, but she didn't see anything. So she told her husband, said, are they have cats or a dog in here? And nobody else was in the shop, supposedly. She talked to the elderly lady who was running the shop, I assume the proprietor, the owner, whatever. And, of course, your typical, you know, think of Stephen King character. How
right.
Can I help you, ma'am? You know, whatever. You know, that area, right? You know, the crotchety, you know.
Did you dress like the Gordon fisherman?
Yeah, like Gordon fisherman with a hook. But anyway. But anyway, she, that's pretty cool. But she was like, what was it? The Pet Cemetery, remember? Mr. Munster or whatever. Hey, don't go down now, now. I don't know what sounds kind of funny to me. I wouldn't go down if I were you. You know, the old, but anyway, she talked like that, all right? The lady even told me that. But anyway.
I'm afraid already.
She asked, do you have a cat or a dog in here? No, ma'am, no cat, no dog, no pets. Well, something's moving up there. Oh, that's Mary, and the pair don't mind. She must like y'all. She goes, what do you mean? She said, that's the ghost that occupies that trunk.
Wow.
So she tells her the story. Well, we didn't know this story before we bought this item.
What?
In fact, the lady didn't want to sell it at an estate sale. My wife had bought a bunch of, she loves to collect things. We bought a bunch of stuff a couple times. And so as we're leaving, when I carried my wife back, I was there by myself first and went back and my wife brought her back. Anyway, my wife sees the trunk over in the garage in the corner all stacked with stuff on top of it, stuff leaning in. She said, I want to buy that trunk. It's not for sale. It's not part of the estate sale. She said, well, I want to buy it. I said, no, it's not for sale. Ma'am, I mean, Don, you know, she knew us by then. We spent enough money there. And my wife said, no, I want my nose. That one looks pretty good when I see of it. How much you want for it? Like, it's not for sale. She said, you really don't want that trunk? I said, honey, come on. You don't want that trunk. Come on, let's go. So he said, no, I'm serious. She said, okay. If you're serious, I'll take X amount of money for it. And it was a low price, maybe. So I knew it was coming. I said, oh, God, I got to lug that trunk to the car.
Yeah, it was just low enough it was going to be yours that day.
That's right. And then I got it halfway down the lady's driveway, and it was on an incline. And she said, bring it back, bring it back. I said, thank you, Lord. Thank you, Jesus. So I lugged it back up her driveway, set it down. We'd already checked the inside, made sure it was empty. She was handing my wife the $40 back, or trying to. And my wife,
$40.
$40, Camelback Victorian trunk. Yes, true. And the lady said, here, Donna, here's your money. You don't want that trunk. that's why I told you I didn't want to sell it. But you don't want it, trust me. And my wife said, no, it's my. I bought it, I want it. I'm going, oh, God, y'all make your minds up, right? Well, please, what I'm thinking. And the lady says, well, okay, but you need to be warned, it's haunted. And I said, oh, hell no, I know we don't want it now, you know? And anyway.
Your wife probably wanted it even more after she said that. Cause
yeah, she proceeded to tell us the story.
Wow.
Her part of it, you know, I mean, she gave us the Cliff Note version, you know, to her. So anyway, she told us her part of it. So sure enough, that's what that first book of mine in that series, Mary's Trunk's, about. And what happened when we got it there. And she said this. Now listen to this. Do you like this, BBI? She said, yeah, we bought it. I thought it looked great in my den, in my home. So I had it in my den. All my animals would go crazy. We owned dog and cat back during that time when we first got it. And they just freaked out around it, especially the cat. Our cat. And she said that during parties and things, Christmas, different holidays and birthdays and such, she said, now if I can find them, Ron, I'll get them to you. But, you know, back then it was 35 millimeter or Polaroid. I said, yeah, I know, you know, the Instamatic stuff. She said, but when we'd take pictures and it was in it, there'd be orbs all around.
Yeah.
I said, oh, yeah, okay. I said, honey, we don't want this trunk. Come on now.
Yeah, it's getting too crazy. We're just going to leave it right here.
Yeah, but anyway, we bought it, and she said, I told my husband, we had it about a year or whatever she said in the house. I said, get that out of this house now. So it's been in her garage ever since. I had to help clean the stuff off around it and what. You know, a camelback, you can't put anything much on a camelback with it being,
no,
you know.
No, everything will just fall on the floor.
Yeah, but, you know, a bag of cat food or dog food, you can, because it'll be in a little curve a little bit. But anyway, I'll help her clean it. But, yeah, that's Mary's Trunk. That's it, for a fact. So that book is based a good bit of it on truth, yes. I'd say faction with heavy on, lighter on fiction than fact, yeah. That's what I would say. And the other parts of the series, I mean, you know, it's a good series, but, you know, that kind of stuff, I mean, until New Orleans with that trip with my daughter and my wife, I'm like, golly. Mm. And you know what, that, and I swear, I mean, I know this sounds cliche-ish or whatever, but my wife, the first night we were in New Orleans, and I'm dead tired, drove from Atlanta to New Orleans all night long with my daughter and my nephew, her age, they were teenagers in middle school. We were up and down that French Quarter, you know, all night long. My wife stayed back at the suite with my younger nephew, and he swimming in the big bathtub we had, you know, the big sauna type thing or whatever. But anyway, I was dead tired, and we were walking distance up and down the quarter from where we were staying. So I'm dead to the world, you know. I'm asleep in a king-size bed, and I'm out. Well, my wife wakes me, and I look up at the little clock on the bedstand, and I go, honey, it's 3:05 in the morning. What are you doing?
Yeah, really?
Yeah, and that's New Orleans time now, 3:00, whatever. So she said, wake up. Go to your daughter's room right now. Go to your daughter's room. I said, well, what are you talking about? You know, go to your daughter's room. Why? There's something in her room. Now, being a policeman, Viviana, okay? Well, that woke me up in a hurry, you know.
Well, yeah, of course.
So I went in there, and I checked all around that hotel, outside and in. I walked around the entire block at 3-something in the morning. There's no place where that little girl's voice and stuff, what she was doing, was coming from. It was in my daughter's room. Second night, same thing. Talked to the management at the hotel. They looked like they just swallowed a canary. Back then, it wasn't...
Cool space.
It wasn't, yeah, they didn't use it for a big advertising ploy as
right.
much back then in the 90s, okay? And I said, and even the manager the next day, we checked out on Sunday, she looked at me like, I swallowed 3 canaries, you know? I mean, yeah, well, Nice. Thanks for staying with us, but you know, you need to warn people that.
I think you should have should have asked for a discount.
You should maybe pay more. No, that's real ghost gives more money.
Well, no, now they probably would charge you more for it, but back then you could have asked for a discount.
Oh, but the funniest part of the scary story, but the funny part is, I got the hotel and everything. I did everything in advance. And I thought I'd gotten a really nice one, you know, within a block of a quarter on the, I guess it's the northern end, you know, not the Canal Street? Yeah, the opposite
right.
end. I got it on the opposite end, but a block from it, you know. I mean, not a half a block from St. Charles or whatever it is, the main drag, Bourbon Street. So, anyway, we pull up this beautiful hotel, and my wife goes, "Hey, you did pretty good this time, old man." My daughter and my nephews go, "Oh, God, Dad, you did all right. This is a nice hotel. Hey, I look after y'all, you know." So I'll get the luggage. Y'all go in and get checked in, honey. So my wife goes in there, and about 3 minutes later, she comes out with her hands on her hip, like, "Uh-huh." Look at me like, "You dumbass." I said, "What?" She said, "This isn't even the hotel. It's four blocks that way." She pointed, you know, straight. It's on the same street. But, baby, every block we went farther north, it got more and more like Beirut or Lebanon. It did. It got like, inner city. I mean, cars on daggum blocks.
Well, this was before Katrina, right?
Yeah, before Katrina. Yeah.
Yeah, because I haven't been back to New Orleans since what they call the thing came. But I remember the area that you're talking about, and that part of town is where I took a walk.
Razor-wired city. Everything's got bars on everything.
God. Oh, my God. I know. I was just like, I thought to myself, well, I got to work off this andouille sausage that I had on my pizza last night. Woke up at like 7 in the morning, and even Café Du Monde wasn't even open yet. And I was like, oh, forget it. You know, I was dying for a cup of coffee. And I got followed by two or three different guys in that neighborhood because I really did not belong where I was. And came around the corner, and some guy followed me for I don't know how long. I ended up going to a shop, and the guy pulled out a baseball bat and said, "Don't worry, honey, I'll protect you." And he walked right out on the street with it. I was like, oh, my God, I got to get out of here.
Really?
Yeah, wow. Really. That is a true story. But, you know, I was in the wrong neighborhood, and I knew I was, but it was getting to the point where I was desperate for coffee. I had to keep walking until I could get some coffee. And I should have just gone in a hotel.
Yeah.
You know, duh, hotels have coffee in the lobby. But instead, I kept thinking to myself, I want to find some, you know, little coffee shop and meet the locals and, you know, get powdered sugar all over my shirt and look like a fool. I want to be in New Orleans.
There you go.
I didn't want to go in a hotel because that's where tourists go. I wanted to be like a cool local.
You took a right. You should have taken a left. You should have gone back toward
local.
The border.
I went local.
Oh, you're going deeper into that's where our hotel was.
Yeah, I got called honey. I met a Louisville.
Well, you know, as we get closer to the haunted hotel, my daughter goes, "Dad, why are all these women sitting around on the corners? They're waiting on cabs, honey." It was terrible. My wife about killed me. But
oh,
beautiful, sweet, nice. Once you got inside, you know how New Orleans is. You'll see a door inside. It's like a garden inside, you know, really nice.
Oh, yeah, they always have the nice courtyards and stuff. Yeah,
so once we got in, it's not bad. Once the, you know, they made it look like a Spanish design where you had the iron doors and stuff with the bars.
Oh,
don't worry about that razor wire on the roof. Don't worry about that, honey. That's no big deal.
I mean, you know, a lot of neighborhoods all across the United States, or a lot of cities are like that. You can literally be in a mansion, even in Savannah, and you could go around the corner and there are people who are not doing very well at all. So I think that's kind of the trend.
That's sort of
what's happening all over the place. But in New Orleans, though, I think it's a little bit more shocking because you're sort of high on that whole, like, buzz the city has. And so when you sort of run into the crowd that I met that morning when I decided to, you know, take a walk around,
You knew you're not in Kansas anymore. I know, yeah.
No,
we're not in Kansas anymore.
All I can say, the best advice I can give a woman is if you're going to get lost in the city when you're taking a walk and you go into the wrong neighborhood, please wear shoes you can run in.
Wear those running shoes, baby.
Yeah, going barefoot's really not an option in a neighborhood like that either.
No.
It really isn't. It's not a good plan.
No, broken bottle of glass everywhere.
Yeah.
But they've cleaned it up a lot since the thing, if I understand. But, you know, we stayed not a half a mile, well, not even half a mile, a quarter mile from there the next time we went. And outside, all it was a tall fence that run along the sidewalk with one big door. You know, you couldn't see inside the compound. But as soon as that door opened, you walk in, and it was this beautiful old house, probably, I'd say late 1800s, early 1900s when it was built. And it had the old block house where they kept the ice in during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
They converted that to an apartment. Then he had another apartment that was like the quarters for the people who worked this little, what area it was. Then we stayed in a house that was built with a federal grant from barge wood. The old ice barge
wood.
Because, you know, real dark, real thick, heavy wood. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And the inside was built with that. It was fantastic. And once you go outside those gates, you're in that area you're talking about, on the fence. But inside it, it's a whole other world. And the man who actually, the people who own the hotel, if you want to call it that, the site, he's an artist, and a lot of his work is hanging all over New Orleans. You know, all the jazz players and stuff and different scenes, New Orleans scene, very famous artist. In fact, when I'd go in and talk to him, and he'd be doing one, and we went to for lunch one day, we went into a Burger King down for a Whopper, you know. And there, some of his stuff, every wall had a picture of his prints on it.
Hey, hold up. You're in New Orleans, and you're eating at Burger King?
Well, sometimes, you know, you got, like, well, Popeye's chicken, you can only eat that, like, four times a day.
That's true.
You need a Whopper every now and again. Come on, now.
Well, if you go back there, you'll have to let me know, and I'll send you my list of where to get.
Oh, no, I've been those places, Cafe Du Monde, I've been up and down the quarter, I've been all over, been out in the suburbs with my friends, the different bars all around, the eating places, go out to Fat City, go down Slidell, you know, yeah. I know New Orleans a little bit. Hey, now, we're going to run out of time because this is too much fun. Tell folks about your books. Tell me about your books. Come on now. Do each one of them and give me a little, you know, a little bit. Give us a little.
All right. Well, Carolina Spirit, that's the one that you're reading right now.
Uh-huh.
It's based in Ladies Island, South Carolina, and it's about a young girl named Gracie. And she loses her father, who's a shrimper, lifetime shrimper. She loses him in a horrible accident. And it sort of awakens this crazy ability of hers to connect to maybe it's ghosts, maybe it's just residual energy. Something is going on when she goes on these walks out in this old plantation that she calls Indigo Road. And it starts pushing her, trying to show her something, trying to tell her something. And she keeps feeling like nobody understands what happened that night. And everybody's just sort of pretending like something's not right, something didn't stack up. And Gracie's a young girl, and she's best friends with an African-American boy named Gus. And I wrote that in to talk at least momentarily about the fact that on an island in South Carolina, this is normal. This is not unusual. And in a lot of media outlets, people try to play that never happens and it's not possible or people can't get along.
Poppycock. Yeah.
Not true. And so I just wanted to talk about it for a minute because, you know, he's a kid that lives on the river. She's a kid that lives on the river. So this is something that's natural. And the only time that, at least in my opinion, especially in that area, that it starts becoming an issue for people is when kids come of age. And these kids are 12, 13, 14-ish years old.
Yeah.
So they're starting to get a little older. But Gus is actually the kindest, most amazing person in the book. And I did that on purpose because there are not very many books anywhere in the world with a boy of his cultural heritage at his age that is a good person. I think that's nuts.
Yeah.
So I decided to give him that in that book, that nod, because there are a lot of great kids out there. And they should be written in books by lots of writers. You know, but I did want to talk about what life is really like in South Carolina, but I also wanted to have this be a coming of age and talk about the mysticism that goes on out on these islands. These islands are really special. If you've never been out there, you're missing out, and you need to get a rental car, and you need to go out there. Don't start bothering all the neighbors or messing up the quiet time of all the people that live out there, but really go out there and enjoy it and understand that there's so much history, and it's just, it is all around you. There's so much to see, and most of it's nature, and there's crumbling plantations and crumbling churches that get struck by lightning and all kinds of crazy stuff out there, but you got to get in your car and you got to go feel it. And this book is my love letter to South Carolina.
You know, that's what we were talking about earlier. Like I said, I'm only like 40 to 40 some pages into it now because I've been writing my poetry book, you know, and I've been busy on that, but I'm reading, and that's what I was finding, you know, there's so much on each page. You know, you may have, I don't know, 8 or 10 paragraphs on a page or less, but it, like every paragraph's almost like a snippet, like you're talking about, like of something different about, you bounce around and like a young girl would do, you know? You know, kind of just knocking about, you know, talking about people and scenery and different things and quirky stuff and importance of things. It's a neat thing. All right, now what's, tell us about, we got about 1 minute. Tell the people where they can find you. How about that?
Well, the easiest place to find my books is on my website, which is bibianacrawl.com. I'm also on Amazon and Twitter, but it's bibianacrall.com. Just how so. But I'm on Twitter with Ron, so you can always find me there with Ron, too. But I'm on Amazon, Tower Books, Barnes & Noble. But, you know, it's about reading. It's about the story. And my other book, Escape into the Blue, is a suspense written from a female viewpoint because I always have a female protagonist. And it's about a pretty wild ride in the Caribbean. That is definitely an adult book, whereas Carolina Spirit is written so anyone of any age can enjoy it for different reasons.
Okay, now what are you working on now? What's the one you worked 6,000 words a day on?
Well, I'm actually, I finished another book, and I'm pitching that to book agents. So I'm looking for somebody who wants to represent a thriller written from a female perspective. And it's a European thriller about a girl who's an assassin for a super corporation in Berlin in the 1980s as the wall's coming down. So it's got a very interesting perspective of Berlin as it's changing. And, you know, things are opening up and free trade is sort of moving around again. So it talks about that. But it also talks about sort of the birth of an assassin, how this girl becomes this kind of person and what kind of changes she has to go through so that she can be that person. But it's very interesting. It's actually three different plots twisted together that come to a big bang at the end. It was hard to write, really hard to write.
Well, so, sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it's a cool book.
Well, okay, now let me tell the folks who's on next week. Next week, folks, tune in Monday night, 8 to 9 p.m. on your internet radio dials for the show, and I'm going to have a poet on with me who's been on before. Richard M. Niddle is going to be back with me, and we'll have a nice night of talking poetry and, you know, sitting under a shade tree and blowing bubbles or something. I don't know. We'll see unicorns and stuff like that. Well, that's next Monday night, and, hey, Bibiana Crawl, thank you very much for being on my show, young lady.
Well, thank you for having me, Ron. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Doesn't the time fly?
It does.
We didn't get into hardly anything. Oh, my gosh. You got to come back. We'll get another date down the road. You can come back. I'd love to cut up some more with you and talk a little bit more about writing and about your college stuff. We didn't get into that either, and I want to do that. But we'll do that next time. You got a return invitation, all right?
Thank you so much. You're the best.
All right. Bye-bye, folks. Bye-bye, Bibiana. Good night.
Bye.